On today's episode, we're going to talk about the importance of meditation, work-life balance, and how to give the proper experience for your customers.
Let's go!
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of The Blind Entrepreneur. I'm your host, Jonathan Grzbowski, and today I have with me Matt Lazarus. He's the founding partner of Archbolt. The rate of change is accelerating faster than most businesses can adapt on their own. Archbolt helps entrepreneurs and brands like Unilever, Nestle, and Prudential put the right experiences into their customers' hands within 60 days. Matt, that's a bold claim, but I'm sure we're going to talk about it throughout this podcast. But I have to find out a few things first. Number one, how is your day going?
Day is going well. It's a beautiful day in New York City. No complaints. Busy week. We're, you know, summer. We're 1 day, 2 days into summer. So, good times.
Exactly. Good times. It's a good time to be alive, without a doubt. But before we get into the hard-hitting, tough questions, I have to ask, and we have to start with an icebreaker. So, imagine you just had the absolute best day of your life. What is that one piece of food that's going to make your day complete?
Oh, man. I'm going to have probably some a dragon fruit smoothie from this place that opened up by my apartment called Loco Coco.
Okay.
Unreal. New take on the acai bowl. Or they throw in like ridiculous toppings, really healthy, super tasty, beats all the other Froyo guys out there.
Very nice. Not bad. I wasn't expecting that. I was very specific, but I got to respect the healthy. I mean, is it healthy? I wouldn't even know. But
a lot of sugar, but
yeah,
natural sugar.
Right, I guess. But Matt, without further ado, please tell us about yourself. Who are you and what is your story?
Yeah, absolutely. Matt Lazarus. I'm from New York City. Started my own company, co-founded a company when I was, I guess, 22, 23. Still going strong and also working on a few other ventures. I went to school in Philadelphia, went to Penn with a focus on psychology and decision making. My professors were pushing me to work at labs, but I told them, guys, I suck at statistics. So I went the opposite direction because I was a people person. I became a tech recruiter for New York City startups like Tumblr, Guilt Group, Foursquare. And from that vantage point of meeting these CEOs who are building the next wave of companies, I was able to see where things were moving towards and what their needs were. And then I was also meeting, UX designers, developers, engineers, and, every day I was telling them, follow your dream, leave the big boring company and go work at a startup or, do something like that. And two things happened. One is I saw that there was a big opportunity in mobile with my partner, Neil. A lot of companies were just building apps, putting it out there, thinking that if you build it, they will come, which we can get into later how that actually plays out. And then secondly, I'm telling all these guys like, hey, follow your dream, do this, do that. And then one day, one of the software engineers, John, his name was also John, he turned around and he was like, dude, go start your own thing. What are you doing? And I was like, that was it. Took the plunge, took the risk. And, part of that was actually, we could get into it, part of that was actually leaving the recruiting firm to just double down on what I was doing. And so we started our company, creating experiences and really building a process to breed successful products, starting with apps, but then we moved into more platforms. And since then, worked with folks like Unilever, as you mentioned, platforms for the NFL, MLB, healthcare. Working with health insurance companies, real estate, logistics. So, runs the gamut and very much, consulting with these companies from a strategic perspective and then helping them execute so that they can stay nimble, stay ahead, especially with guys like Amazon coming in to take over their industries.
Yeah, or the world for that matter at this point. I'm actually, I want to talk about what it is that you just mentioned about having this philosophy of like, if you build it, they're automatically going to be able to sign up. It's going to go viral because, you know, you decided to make it go viral in your own head. So with that in mind, how does Archbolt actually fix that issue? And what are some things that we need to look for in building a startup or a business?
Yeah, I mean, take it for a startup. Like when people come to us, they say, hey, we have this idea or this is what we're working on. And, you know, one of the first questions that we like to ask them is, well, what's your user acquisition strategy? Mm. A lot of folks think, oh, yeah, like I'm going to put this out there. I'm going to hit launch and then people are going to come flooding in. But as we both know, nothing could be further from the truth. You have to actively and consciously go out there, talk to customers, as we like to say, co-create with them, bring them into that process so that whatever you're building, you actually know that they're that it's something that they want, but more importantly, it's something that they're willing to pay for. So by incorporating marketing and thinking about that from the beginning, you actually can de-risk and take a lot of the... You have to be more paranoid that they're actually not going to come. What's everything that you're going to do to drive them through there strategically and effectively as possible, given that you probably have limited resources that you're working with? Mm. You're just like bootstrapping or an entrepreneur. And then with that, we challenge the heck out of the entrepreneurs who come to us and their ideas. And look, they know their domains and their expertise and the problem they're solving. We've done it, you know, as founders and operators. So we like to challenge and put it through the ringer, ask these hard questions because, the first thing is like, are you even solving the right problem? Is this truly the need? And are we looking at it? Are we framing it the right way? You know, it goes back to that age old, someone said it, if people were trying to solve for an elevator in their building because the elevator was too slow and, you know, when I ask, like, what are ways that you can solve it, you could say, oh, yeah, fix the levers and the gears and install a new elevator and whatnot. But if you actually reframe the problem, the other way to look at it is say, it's not that the elevator is too slow, it's that people are annoyed by it. So the solution actually is put up mirrors or, you know, put a TV or add music so that they're distracted because they get to look at themselves or something like that. So different ways of framing the problem actually open up solutions that you might not even be thinking about it. So bringing that perspective to our entrepreneurs is a big part of the strategy and thinking around our approach.
Is there a common thing that you see startups doing that they can stop doing, for example, or maybe even, let's start there. Like, is there anything that one common problem that you see that your clients, the entrepreneurs that you meet are consistently doing that they need to stop doing?
The first thing is when they're, especially for first-time entrepreneurs, when they're like so married to their idea that they're like sometimes afraid to tell it to anybody and they say, like, make you sign an NDA. That's a big no-no because the thing is feedback is your best friend. That's really what's going to drive things forward and talking to as many people as possible about it. A lot of people think like, we've heard it many, so many times, like, oh, I have a $1 billion idea, but as we know, that's worth nothing. You have to talk to people and get that out there. So that's one of the biggest, you don't want to tell anybody about their idea. But the first conversation you have about it could completely change your assumptions or at least challenge them. So something, it's big.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. When it comes to, I guess like entrepreneurship and business, we may not have the resources. So let's talk to the individuals who may not have, $1 million in a bank or they're looking for funding, but they're trying to find techniques and, unique ways in order to get their product out there. What can I do as a business today that can better prepare me for tomorrow?
Best thing you can do as a fledgling or bootstrapping startup is not only talk to your customers, but see whatever that you can do that will get them to start paying you for delivering the solution that you're promising. So, for example, we have entrepreneurs who come to us and say they want to build a big platform or an app or whatnot that's going to be able to power the things that they want to do. But in a lot of those cases, we say, guys, you don't even need an app. You don't even need a website. Did I lose you?
No, you're good.
We say, guys, let's actually try and do some of these things manually to see what people will actually pay for and if they're willing to go through it. And by going through those manual steps and doing that hard work, which you could be sometimes doing for months, if not years, will inform you of what the actual workflow and steps look like, so that when you actually build something, it's completely backed by data, firsthand experience, and going through that. I mean,
What was that moment, though? I'm curious, because I could speak personally to that. Being a data-driven company now, when was there a moment in that you realized that you need to be that, or your clients need to be more data-driven? Because I feel like that's not like a typical like first-time entrepreneur's thought. It's like, I need to collect data. I feel like you have to go through a lot in order to figure that out, that how important data is. So when was your moment?
That's a good question. I mean, one of the engagements that we were brought onto was for a healthcare platform for the doctors and trainers on professional and college sports teams. So right there up front, you have people's lives and, you know, patients, their health and wellness is on the line. So it's one thing to say, oh yeah, like we have a hunch about how this experience or product should be. And the entrepreneur had actually come to us with, they're an eminent doctor, orthopedic surgeon, like top of the line when it comes to sports medicine. They came to us with 100+ pages of wireframes of the idea that they had already invested a lot of money and time into putting together. And from our experience, we said, look, we could build this out for you. It's going to cost a lot of money. We might be building this for 6 months, 9 months, a year. But what we did was we actually went to Yankee Stadium and spoke to the trainers, the head trainer, the doctor, and we observed them in their natural environment to get a firsthand sense of how that looks. The bottom line is, when you're going to be putting something out there that has, you know, when it's healthcare on the line, you can't really afford to guess or put something out there. You have to integrate the users on day one, because if you're not putting something in front of them that's going to be easy to use, what's going to come first, the patient or the product? The product's going to, you know, they're throwing that away if it gives them any issues.
No, totally. I agree. And you know, I was thinking about your introduction and about how, you know, the right experience into their customer's hands in 60 days. Let's talk about the word experience. What does experience mean to you? What does the word experience mean to your organization?
Experience is when it's the first impression that you have someone, it's them delivering on their promise. So if you think about brand, which is core and underlies everything, and that's your culture and how you present yourself out to the world, your experience is how you manifest that. And from a customer side, in some ways, they don't care. You know, everyone's in their own lives. They're doing their own thing, and they're thinking about how can we, you know, avoid pain at a base level? How can we avoid pain, increase our pleasure, and do what we need to do to not only survive, but to thrive? So when we interact with other brands, with products and services, that experience is that it's that boundary between us and a company and a service, and it's how well we actually blur that or dissolve that boundary so that that brand or experience or product can actually come into our lives and improve it without it being a hassle or an annoyance. So like one of the metaphors that we use is like a good experience or a good app or a good product is like love at first sight. When you see it, you're really excited and you want to just keep learning more about it. You can't stop yourself. I know that first when I use certain apps or products, I tell all my friends about it. Like my girlfriend just got me a SodaStream. I make everybody try it, and you know, I pump all the bubbles, make their ears tear and stuff. Same thing for, I could tell you about, I have a list like Loco Coco, Via, all these other products. I could go off on for days because they've given me such a good experience. We like to say that, like, you know, bad products or platforms or software that's clunky is more like an arranged marriage where you kind of just have to deal with it and learn to love it, or, you know, get a divorce.
Right, right. That's an interesting concept. I mean, is there, I guess to that, could you give us examples of what does like a great experience look like? And then like, I mean, obviously you use the SodaStream, but if you would like to kind of highlight a client that you've been able to work with, you know, you, by all means, you could do that as well. Maybe talk about like a good experience that you just absolutely love. And then another one where you're just like, meh.
Yeah, I'll start with the meh experience because I think it's something that we could all relate to. One would be kind of like our cable companies. Not to start raising the millennial cord cutting flag, which I totally subscribe to and advocate. But if you look at I won't name names, but I know my cable provider, it's something we literally can't use another one because of our building is just equipped for that. So we have to use their system, which doesn't really breed competition or doesn't get them to innovate. So as a result, their app is the clunkiest thing under the sun. Their customer service is so-so. Mm-hmm. And when, you know, you could just tell it's like boxy, it's not really fun or exciting to use. And it's kind of a pain in the butt. That leads us to consider things like YouTube TV, which as an experience, you pull that up. It's the most beautiful experience for how you can consume TV that no one's really put out there. Now it's just a matter of waiting for it to hit, some of the more like the distribution channels. You can only get it if you have a smart TV, which, you know, that's a shame, but sooner or later that's gonna, you know, turn around. Personal experiences. One is this is another good one. Everyone knows Uber, obviously, and that's in the news. But Uber Pool for me is one of the worst experiences because you get picked up, you're shooting up, and they'll actually turn you around and start taking you through side streets and up, down, whatever, upside down. I've been on one of those where you're going up the FDR highway, big highway in Manhattan. I'll take you off, go pick someone up and go back. It's like horrendous. The experience is extremely poor. It's terrible. On the other hand, you have a company called Via here in New York City, and they're starting to move into Chicago and DC, and they're exclusively ride sharing. So they're built for, they've built their entire algorithm around, you know, it's like basically a fleet of large Suburbans, Escalades, now sedans, big trucks, but you never go out of your way. So you'll get picked up usually on the corner. So you have to walk a little, but you're always going in the right direction. So if I'm going from the Upper East Side down to the bottom tip of Wall Street, I'm either going south or west, and that's it. Go out of your way. and it's $5 flat anywhere in the city. It is the most delightful thing in the world. I tell everyone about it. I send them my link. Matthew 6, C3, if you
I get money every time. It's not a paid advertisement.
You know, but I love it, and I tell everybody about it. And Uberpool's trying to undercut them for $4 a ride or $3 a ride. But at the end of the day, the drivers are also much happier because they're getting paid hourly. So they're just going where they have to go and picking people up, and you're always going in the right direction. So that was my plug for Via. Thank you so much for what you guys are doing. They're very innovative.
If you're listening, please. We need a sponsorship for the two of us. Free rides for life. That's a great example, and I appreciate you talking to us about that. I'd like to learn a little bit more about who you are as a professional. So I got to ask the question, and I'm just curious, like what do you do for fun?
What do I do for fun? It's tough as an entrepreneur because you kind of blend. Things get blended where where your business and becomes a lot of what you do. So when you talk to people, when you meet people, it really infuses into a lot of that. But I'm not a workaholic, and I definitely have a work-life balance. Maybe I am a workaholic, but I do have a balance. So for fun, I like to go to the park. Central Park is right here. Like yesterday, I took a walk through the park, meditated for a bit, just like getting out into nature and getting out of the office is like the best thing you can do. And I love that. So I'm, you know, and I like to meditate. I don't know if you could qualify that as something for fun, but I definitely enjoy it. Other than that, like New York City, food festivals, music festivals, going out, with summer here, hitting a rooftop for a drink or grabbing a bite is always great. And then I love traveling. Mm. I was in Costa Rica last summer. Hopefully going to have go on another trip soon. But I really like when I travel, I really like planting myself somewhere and immersing myself be in that space and going into a new city or a new country without like a rigid itinerary is like one of my favorite things to do because that allows you to be more spontaneous and get out of some of the routine and there's a good routines have their benefits and you want to build good habits, but there's something also to be said about getting out of that.
Yeah, totally. Well, you mentioned meditating. What do you use in order to meditate, and how do you get into the Zen, so to speak?
Good question. So a lot of people use Headspace, and there's a lot of apps that are out there. What I've found, and what's actually like true of meditation, which has been around out for like 5,000, 10,000 years, maybe even longer. Like I've seen like pictures of baboons like zenning out in like the Japanese like. Like those warm like volcanic baths. So who knows? Maybe monkeys meditate too. But it's always been transmitted through a community and through people, and it gets the traditional ways that it gets transferred through a teacher, or a guru. Well, I haven't had that per se. The way I got into it was through people and that kind of like osmosis. Like, so my girlfriend's dad has been a Buddhist meditator since some of the first Buddhist communities formed here in the West back in the 60s. So I went with him to a few things up in Boston. My girlfriend got me a cushion. And that was like, so I said, I had a little practice going at home. And from there, the first step is just building a routine. You got to just sit down for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes. And then to actually get in the Zen, it's not that complicated, easier said than done, but it's all you have to do is sit, you strain out your posture and you just focus on your breath. You don't try and force anything per se. There's different ways of doing it, but that's like the quick and dirty is when you just focus on the breath and let the thoughts come in. They'll do their thing. You let them go. You come back to the breath. That's it. And then there's a sequence to how everything works. But that's the starting point. I'm still a beginner. I've only been doing it for maybe a year.
Wow. A year. That sounds pretty advanced to me for a year, but, I'm curious. You mentioned, you mentioned work-life balance being something that you seem to have under control, whereas most people have absolutely no idea what work-life balance is. How do you maintain that work-life balance? What are some tricks that we could take from you?
First trick is airplane mode.
Okay.
Airplane mode, do not disturb. I mean, the issue with work-life balance, it's not so much work-life life anymore, it's tech-life balance.
Very true.
I was talking to my friend's girlfriend via FaceTime. We were FaceTiming her, and she pulled up her wrist, and she actually has her finger was numb, and she had to get a wrist brace, because turns out she has carpal tunnel, and she's only like 23 or so. So I personally, over the last week, my wrists have been killing me as well. Like, I do yoga and all that, but this is going to afflict a lot of our generation, the kids who are like 10 years old who can't look away from their screen. So for me, it's not even work life anymore, because there's something to be said of like emails coming in nonstop. You're answering them, you're texting, you're reading articles, you're plugged in, you're on Slack. There's a lot, you're hyper connected. But just tech aside, we have to find that balance sooner than later, because I'm not sure if you saw that. On 60 Minutes, there was a segment called Brain Hacking, which is about what Silicon Valley does to keep you plugged in. And one of the things that they do is Instagram will actually, so say John, you're going to put a post on for Blind Entrepreneur, and you start getting those likes flooding in. What Instagram will do is actually hold back a set of those likes. So maybe you're going to get 200 or 1,000 likes. Maybe they'll keep 500 of those or 50 of those and release them an hour from now, 2 hours, 2 days, a week later, so that you're getting that shot of that hit of dopamine to come in and keep checking the app out. And as we all know, once you get an Instagram, you start seeing something else. Your attention gets pulled into 1,000 different directions, or sooner or later you're stuck in, like, you're looking at like a kiwi bird in from New Zealand, like, who knows, or worse, or for better or for worse. So
that's interesting.
Yeah, that's if Silicon Valley is employing those types of methods to make sure that you're plugged in, and they also found that you get hit with a cortisol, your cortisol, which is your stress hormone, will spike if you don't check your phone every 15 minutes or so, or if you see that you got a notification or your phone vibrates. So we're hooked right now. Like, I've noticed it last night. I put my phone back. I had to keep going back. Like, we're actually launching a new app for one of our clients, and we're relaunching an app. And I found myself getting so hooked by it that I was like, did somebody like my post or do something? I'm like, and that's also where I'm kind of towing the line between advocating for being more mindful about technology, but I'm also creating some of that. So that's that's like the light side and the dark side of what all of us are going through right now. And it's kind of the great experiment of our generation.
Yeah. I mean, I can totally relate to that. Just getting pinged constantly, Slack messages coming across. It's high stress, high pressure situations. When it comes to resources that you use, you mentioned that you're creating an app and kind of just like retooling an app. What are some resources that you use every single day that you just can't live without?
Tools I use every single day. Like, what do you mean? Like
tech resources, maybe like some, maybe like you said Headspace, for example. I know you may not use it, but something to that you're just like, I use this all the time.
Let's see. So I use an app called Streaks, which is it's like the simplest app out there. Like, you can see it right there. But basically, it you put in like what are the habits that you're trying to cultivate, and then once you do it, you say I've done it, and you basically start building these streaks, which from a psychological perspective gives you momentum, and sooner or later, you're doing something not because like it's just about wanting to do it, because you don't want to break that streak. So that's how Jerry Seinfeld has become like one of the most prolific comedians in history, is because he'll actually mark his calendar with an X every day when he writes his jokes.
Okay.
So he doesn't stop doing that. So for me, that's how I've been able to, you know, cultivate these habits and keep them going for like hundreds of days of things that I'm doing, whether it's, you know, reaching out to someone or, you know, building a connection. Like I've turned that in, of how I do that, I've turned that into a habit. And streak I use every single day, probably like once in the morning and then in the evening, just to like mark off what I've done. And that's been invaluable.
No, that's cool. That's, I mean, one. I never heard of that one before. So I'll have to check that one out. Now I guess like the last major question that I have is more so about just advice. So The Blind Entrepreneur, this podcast, was created for individuals who may be temporarily blind in business, who may not be able to see the obvious, who may be stuck in a particular headspace and they just can't get out of it. Probably the individuals that would be perfect clients for you, because they don't necessarily understand how to give their customers the proper experience and fix their problems in business. So what are three pieces of advice that you would give to those individuals that are in that situation?
Okay, so one is, I assume most of you guys will have a day job, which, you know, you're thinking of maybe quitting, which is what I did. First piece of advice is think long and hard before you do something like that. You do not have to quit your job in order to create a business or a startup. Our generation is going to come to be known as the side hustle, generation, millennials. Well, by having those, by doing things as side hustles, it allows you to test those ideas and concepts without, you know, going broke or losing your, you know, getting kicked out of your apartment. So if you're able to do that, do it while keeping your day job and your income coming in. So that's the first thing I think about. Even if you're miserable, change jobs, but what you want to make sure you can still sustain yourself. That's first and foremost. Two, along those lines, is that when you're starting to test these things out, you're going to be working on things. You might be working like 12, 15, 20 hour days. Be really conscious about how you use your time and energy, and know when you perform at your peak self and your performance. So for example, I know that one of the founders at a company called Buffer, when he was starting his company, he was freelancing and working with a lot of clients, and when he would get home at the end of the day, that's when he would work on Buffer. But he said that when he shifted that he would start waking up earlier to get Buffer done as the first thing that he would do. And then he would work on client stuff. So that's the other thing, is know yourself and when you perform at your best, so that if you're a morning person, and by focusing on what you want to build first, maybe you have to wake up a little earlier, but by doing that, you know that you're actually moving the needle. Mm. As opposed to when you get home at the end of the day and it's like completely, you know, you're done. You can't really like lift a finger when it comes to actually like putting your best self out there.
That's great. I mean, those are great pieces of advice, and I'm sure it's something that everybody struggles with. So Matt, thank you so much for that information. The podcast is you've successfully completed the podcast with ease, with flying colors. So if you could just look right into the camera and give us a 30-second pitch. Tell us how people can follow you, how they could be a part of your journey, and how they can take part of your mission.
Awesome. Archbolt.com. You'll find everything about us, but at the end of the bottom line is that it comes down to how are you going to solve problems, the key problems for your customers by delivering the right experiences, and how can you do it as quickly as possible so that you're making data-driven decisions and refining from there. A lot of entrepreneurs think, like we said at the beginning, if I build it, they will come, or I have this great idea. Nothing matters until you put something out there and you start getting customers through the door and paying you money, or refining until they start doing it. So that's what we've built our practice on, is executing as strategically as possible to maximize our client success and to make sure that their customers are being served, are getting the best experience possible.
And so it's archbolt.com. Is there any, how can we find information about you? Any social media channels that you like to throw out there?
Yeah, I mean, I'm on Instagram, Lazarus_Matthew with one T. It might not be the easiest to find, but might be linked. Twitter is, what's my Twitter? I think it's Matthew.Lazarus.
Okay. And regardless, even if you forget them, even if you don't have them, they'll all be linked at the show notes. So people will be able to find out, follow up with you, and contact you directly. Matthew, without further ado, thank you again so much for the opportunity to talk with you today. For everybody else still listening and watching, thank you for liking, commenting, and subscribing. Have a good rest of your day, Matthew. Until next time.
Thank you so much for watching this video. Don't forget to follow me on any and all social media platforms using the long last name above, followed by the letter J. If you want to get lost into the dark abyss of YouTube, click either left or right for another video. And finally, don't forget to hit the subscribe button. No, seriously, don't forget.